South Africa will present their BRRR. The annual report. Then day after, regulations as per our agreement. So now we'll hand over to Legal Aid South Africa, to you, Chairperson, to do the introductions and overview. Thank you so much. Okay, in our midst, maybe a new member you might not be knowing formally in this committee. It's Honorable Van Rooyen. Yes, and then I think you know Honorable Skhosana. And when he arrives, we'll introduce him. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you once more for having us from Legal Aid South Africa to present our annual performance report. In my team today, I've got the CEO next to me, Ms. Vidi Vedalanka, and then I've got Mr. Patrick Handelmark, who's our legal development executive, and then next to the CEO, I've got a board member and the deputy chair of the audit committee, Ms. Adila Chauhan, and then next to her is the CFO, Ms. Rebecca Chabatau. And then next to Rebecca is Mr. Brian Nair, the National Operations Executive. And next to Brian, we've got the provincial manager from Limpopo and Mpumalanga, Mpo Hadi. And then we've got the internal audit executive who wanted to come and experience this committee for the first time. And then we have... Yeah, it's Sitopo, I think that's his name. Mama Teddy. Sitopo Mama Teddy, yeah. And then we've got Ms. Cordelia Robertson, the provincial executive for the Western Cape and Northern Cape. And then we've got Mr. Advocate Peter Durant. He is the Minister of Justice's representative, or the Director General of Justice's representative on the board. He's been with the board for quite some time. I think that's the team. Chair, thank you very much. That's what I bring. And by way of overview, Chair, with your permission, I propose to simply say from a board perspective, that is the board of directors or the board of Legal Aid South Africa, things are working well. We are approaching a transitional phase where my term and the terms of a number of other board members, long-standing board members, are coming to an end. We have initiated a process where we use a nominations committee of the board. We've consulted the Minister of Justice in this regard to send out adverts for people who may have an interest in joining the Board of Legal Aid South Africa to apply. And we have set out a process as to how it's all going to happen, and then going back to the minister to approve and appoint those people who are going to be joining the board. But in general, up to now, the board is working well, board business is going well, we've got nothing out of the ordinary that we want to highlight, but we've presented, I think, two or three slides about board business. I'm happy as chair that things are going well. The deputy chair, unfortunately, could not make it today. He's sitting in a full court appeal in Johannesburg. Right. So with your permission, Chair, could I then hand over to the CEO and her team just to present the performance activities of Legal Aid South Africa, because we've delegated that responsibility to them, even though we retain the oversight responsibility. Thank you, Chair.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members of the committee. I'm going to do the highlights of the presentation, of our performance, and then members of the team will talk to specific slides. We won't go through every slide. We will keep it brief, so that because you have received it and you have received our annual report, because then it will give us time to take the questions. At the overall level, we are really pleased to inform the committee that we have done well in this past financial year of 2017-18, which ended in March, and that we delivered on our business plan. We completed the third year of our strategic plan, and as the chairperson said, that the board is working well. We are also contributing to SDG 16.3, which is looking at promoting the rule of law at national and international levels and ensuring equal access to justice for all. So we're working well on that, and in addition, we are ensuring that our other programs, including our leadership program, which ensures that the organization continues to function, is in place. In terms of our legal services delivery highlights, we are again on track. We delivered and we assisted 731,000 plus people in 426,000 plus legal matters and 306,000 plus advice matters, and we'll give more details on that. In addition, we'll also give details on the children we assisted and the way in which we've done that, which is through the coverage of all the criminal courts in the country using a mixed model system where we have lawyers employed by Legal Aid, as well as we work with private lawyers to a smaller extent. Overall, we are happy with the delivery and the quality of the delivery, and we want to assure the committee that it's all on track. In terms of the legal aid regulations and manual, those were approved and in place. As far as the issue of quality, as I said, is concerned, we also are satisfied that was on track. The court stakeholder relationship continued, and we ensured that we engage with the court stakeholders at a lower court and at a high court level. And in terms of impact matters, as you know, we also do impact matters, which are matters that impact on a larger number of people, and also help us in terms of establishing jurisprudence on various matters, etc. We are also on track with a success rate of about 79%. Then we also continued our client-focused service, where we had a new charter that was launched. We did have one in the past. We just redid it, and so that we give focus to it again, and that we also then continue to work with all other parts of the criminal justice system in terms of making the justice system itself work, because as a player, as one of the stakeholders, we are mindful that we have to work with others. Moving from legal services delivery to our other performance, we are also pleased to advise you that in terms of financial management, we continued our good record with our 17th unqualified audit, and I'm sure you're happy to hear that. When you read in the media about the number of audit problems we have, I think we were happy that we're maintaining it, and we have to maintain it, and I think our board plays an important role in overseeing that. And even on the issue of people development, as we've explained in the past, because the bulk of our legal services delivery is done by our own lawyers who we employ as salaried lawyers, we ensure that our people programs are in place so that we support our lawyers and our other staff. And in that context, we were also accredited as a top employer for the ninth year in that financial year. And recently, we just confirmed that we have now been accredited for the 10th year. We are also pleased to say that within that, what they have is they have categories of different sectors, and in the public sector category of top employers, we are the leader in that sector. So that also helps us in terms of keeping focus and ensuring that we continue our performance. On the issue of our brand, we do an annual survey where we look at awareness of legal aid, and we were pleased that is increasing as indicated. And in addition to that, our other parts of our support platform that supports the delivery of legal services was also on track with our IT platform and our internal audit work being in place. As we said at the last meeting, we are setting up a new electronic legal aid admin system to replace one that we've had since 2003, and that's on target to be delivered in this financial, in the new financial year. We move on to the report on performance on each of those segments, starting with legal services delivery and linking to the programs that we listed in our business plan. And I'll hand over to the head of our national operations, Brian Nair, and he'll take you through that, and then he'll be assisted by others, and then we'll move on through the slides. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
My apologies. I forgot to tell you that you have 60 minutes to present. Yes. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. How are we dealing with the reporting on performance? Okay, thank you, Chairperson. How are we dealing with the continuing with report on performance in as far as it deals with legal services delivery, primarily focused on how to deal with the criminal aspects. The first component of our business plan deals with client, community, stakeholders, and shareholders. An important strategy in the program in slide 12 deals with delivering quality, client-focused legal aid in criminal matters. So you'd note there, Chairperson, that we aim to ensure that we deliver quality services to our clients within the budget constraints that we have. And the targets that we have set ourselves in this particular program deals with coverage of courts. And you'll note that our delivery exceeds the target for the financial year that has passed by 3% in the district court and 2% in the regional court. Moving to the next slide, in terms of our actual delivery in criminal legal services, you'd note that our new matters, we had 371,000 new matters for the financial year, and our internal practitioners covered 86% in terms of court coverage in district court, 95% regional court, and I court we cover all matters that require legal aid, so there's no court coverage plan as such. Whereas in the district and regional court, we have a court, a practitioner per court model, so we try to cover as many days as possible in those courts. In terms of the actual taking on matters, 84% of all matters are district court matters, 15% regional court, and 1% is I court. We have also dealt with matters at the SEA, of which 31 appeals took place, and we're happy to report that more than one out of two matters were successful at the SEA. We carefully watch our pending matter situation. As you would see in the district court and the I court, we were well within our target, but we did breach it at the regional court, where we exceeded targets by just over 4%. With regard to the matter differentiation in criminal courts, you'd note that the bulk of the matters are dealing with crimes of an aggressive nature and across all court types, followed by economic crimes and then narcotics. Sexual offences, you'll note that, as expected, it's higher in the regional and I court as compared to the district court. And you'll see in the district court program, again, it's showing the split between the court types, 85% by and large, the bulk of the work is done in the district courts. If we move to slide 15, this is giving you a similar view of the information, but it's more clearly outlining the pending matter situations in the last three columns, where we have our target, and it shows that we are doing well in district court and I court, but there's still a concern with regards backlog situations in the regional court. Overall, our pending matters as at the end of the financial year was standing at 172%, with the backlog situation at 16.3%. Moving to slide 16. This combines both the criminal, civil, and the advice component, and we can say that we have assisted 700 clients in 731,000 matters during the financial year, and the split is contained in the slide. Our footprint, Chairperson, remains the same for a number of years. We have 64 local offices. You'd note that we don't refer to them as justice centres anymore. They are now referred to as local offices. And we have also 64 satellite offices. Staffing, as you'd see in other slides, there was a drop in the financial year, and it will be addressed in the future in subsequent slides. There was our recruitment rate was 95.1, of which just under 80% are legal staff, which includes paralegals. We have got a large accredited judicare practitioner population, just over 1,200. So they do some very good work for legal aid. We have some cooperation partners also, mainly with university law clinics, and we also have 5 agency agreements. The mixed model is in place, but the bulk, as you can see in item 3 of that slide, is done by our in-house lawyers, over 95% of the work. Moving to slide 17, the mixed model is further elaborated on in this slide, and you'd note that in item in the last bullet, our clearance rate is 0.98, so we are taking on almost the same as what we are finalizing. So that's quite a good number in terms of our clearance rate. Moving to slide 18, this shows you a three-year view of our statistics. As you'd note, in the criminal legal aid delivery, there's been a drop year on year from 2015 right up to 2017-18. And the reasons for it is included below. We think some of it is because of increased or improved screening of cases at courts. So cases that shouldn't be at court are taken out. We also note that a large number of matters are finalized by the NPA through the informal mediation program. And we also noted that there is a decrease in the number of cases that go through the court system. So the number of criminal matters has decreased year on year for the last 3 years. And civil, you can see it's very, very much the same. It has increased and decreased year on year. Moving to slide 19, again, it's giving you a similar view of the criminal and civil split per delivery model. And again, once again, you'll find the local offices, by and large, dominate the delivery of legal aid for legal aid. And moving to the last slide that I'll present, Chairperson, dealing with quality. We have an elaborate quality management program within the organization. Mm-hmm. It comprises both more intervention and monitoring programs. And you'll find that we pay attention to many things, including monitoring supervisory levels, looking at the differentiated quality monitoring programs, which includes providing the necessary support to individual practitioners. Training programs in place. It includes mentorship and coaching programs. We have a provincial audit provincial legal team that provides support at the local level. And we also have an independent quality assurance unit that's based in our internal unit audit department, and they provide, they do reviews and they provide assurance to the board in terms of our quality. So we're pleased to say that less than 1% of our practitioners fail to meet our quality targets. And the last slide, Chairperson, deals with a program that we think is also very important, and how do we actually work with our stakeholders in the justice system. So you note that we participate actively in all provincial, national, and local structures. It used to be called case flow meetings. It's now the efficiency and enhancement structures. And that is where we try to proactively work with our stakeholders to ensure improved efficiency in courts. I'll hand over to Patrick. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. I will deal with civil legal services delivery and providing of legal aid in civil matters. As you'll see, we set the targets, but in terms of our delivery against those targets, we delivered a total of 55,415 new civil matters, which is 6.1% less than the previous financial year. Our local offices took on 49,000 of those new matters, which is 10.4% higher than the targets we set in terms of what we expect the practitioners to carry as a caseload. 2% of the new matters were allocated to Judicare, which is the private practitioner component, and then 9% of the new matters were allocated to our cooperation partners, which Brian previously indicated were mostly university law clinics that we also fund via our cooperation agreements. If I move on to slide 23, and looking at representation to vulnerable groups in civil legal matters, so of our matters, 16% was provided for children. Women made up 51% of the applicants that we assisted. Mental health care users was 2%. The elderly made up 12%. and then land and eviction related matters was 10%. In regard to impact matters, as we've shown earlier, we allocated 25 new matters or funding to 25 new matters, and we finalized 15 in 19, in fact, of which 15 had outcomes, but we achieved a 79% success rate. There were three matters in which were unsuccessful, but we have funded appeals in those three matters to take them further. 23.9% of the pending civil matters were beyond our turnaround time of 18 months. We set a target of 30% on civil matters because they obviously take longer to finalize than what civil matters would. As I mentioned earlier, we exceeded our targets for our internal practitioners. We've also implemented what we call hot doc software, which is used to increase efficiencies within our civil units and sections in that it has standard documents and pleadings that they can use throughout the case, and the principle of data in one. So if I've got my client's name in our system one time, I don't ever have to capture it again on any document that's required for any future document to be generated in that case. And in that way, we enhance our efficiency in terms of the use of data. In terms of our outreach in civil matters, so we provided outreach in civil services as follows. So we have linkages with 145 community advice offices, so that we ensure that they are able, or their clients are able, to access litigation services. We made 1,422 visits to these community advice offices. We saw 6,886 clients, and then we opened, as a result of that, 1,111 new files. We also have a general advice service, which is made available at 357 community outreach sites, at which 10,516 clients were assisted with general legal advice, which is a decrease of about 5.4% on the previous financial year. And then at our civil legal aid clinics, where we really deal with a specific topic that we find in specific areas is a problem, and at those types of clinics where we presented on specific topics, we assisted 10,674 clients. We've also maintained linkages with 232 organizations working with vulnerable groups in order to ensure that their clients also have access to legal services where required. I don't think I'll go into the detail. That's our matter differentiation. 44% of our work is related to family-related matters, which would be divorces, maintenance, domestic violence, and then children, 18%, of which a large proportion would be estates for children that are, in essence, orphans, where we administer the estates to ensure that the money gets paid into the Guardians Fund. Land matters, 14%. If I look and deal a little bit more in detail with the children, as you can see, we provide assistance to 16,350 children in matters, of which 62% were for children in conflict of the law, and 38% were for children in civil matters. Children were assisted in 4,146 preliminary inquiry matters. That's obviously children that are in conflict of the with the law, where there are preliminary inquiries before the court decides whether they're going to go on trial or not. Children awaiting trial in custody are tracked to ensure speedy resolution of their matters. As at the end of March of 2018, there were 46 children awaiting trial in custody for a period longer than 1 month. There was about a 10.9% decrease in new children's criminal matters. And obviously, we've continued partnerships with stakeholders involved in child justice to ensure that the objectives of the Child Justice Act are met. Assistance to children in civil matters decreased by 6.6% when compared to 2016-17. And of those matters, 3,409, as I mentioned, were estate matters involving children. That just provides the details of matters involving children over the last three financial years. As you can see, there's been, as is the trend, as we've shown generally across the board, there's been a decrease over the period, although the split is changing in that it's less now criminal and it's also slight increase in civil matters. Obviously, in terms of our advice matters, as our primary, we don't only provide legal representation, we also do provide advice. These advice services are available through both our local offices as well as our satellite offices, and a call center that we are legal aid advice line. So from the previous financial year, you will see we assisted, well, in the financial year we assisted 305,239 clients through those three mechanisms. It constituted a 5.4% decrease from 2016-17 financial year. But these services are demand-based and therefore no clients are turned away in terms of advice matters. General advice, there's once again a three-year trend in terms of advice. You can see in the middle here there was a significant increase, and in this last financial year that we're reporting on, a slight decrease to the 305. In terms of impact matters, as you will see, impact litigation is really the matters where we try and set precedent or where there's a significant issue to be dealt with. As an example, life is a domain, we provided a team of legal representation to the survivors of life is a domain. As I mentioned, there were 25 matters, new matters approved for funding. We finalized 19. The success rate of the 14 matters that were finalized with an outcome was 79%. As I mentioned, the three that were unsuccessful, we've also the committee that considers them has approved funding for the appeals in those matters. And then on the last slide, this is obviously just our accounting to the executive authority and parliament. So in terms of our target, we are required to report quarterly to our executive authority and then one annual report, which obviously we tabled in parliament. They were all submitted, four quarterly reports against our annual performance plan 2017-18 were submitted to the executive authority. And then our integrated annual report for 2016-17 was submitted to Parliament, the Executive Authority and National Treasury and Auditor General by 31st of August 2017, obviously the year in which we're reporting is when that was delivered. We're obviously now back a year later where we've submitted, so.
Chair,
thank you, Chair.
We now will go through the support and finance issues, and our CFO, Rebecca Slabotow, she'll take you through those slides.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, in terms of financial sustainability, we prepared the MTF 2018-2019 to 2020-2021, which was approved by the Board, submitted to National Treasury and the Department of Justice timelessly. The 2018-19 budget was approved by the Board before the commencement of the financial year. This was after adjusting it with a 5% budget cut. We also prepared a compliant annual financial statement which was free from material misstatements and was submitted to the Auditor General and the National Treasury timelessly. As a result, an unqualified audit opinion with no emphasis of matters was issued by the Auditor General indicating optimum financial maturity. In terms of financial management, we implemented good cash flow management despite the grant allocation reduction of 92 million. Our main source of revenue being the government grant of 1.7 billion. Continue to maintain a healthy financial ratios despite the reduction in cash flow as we had to reduce our cash reserves to supplement the budget that was reduced. And we maintained our current ratio was maintained at 1.2:1. So we continue to maintain healthy solvency and liquidity ratios. Strong financial planning and expenditure resulted in 99% of our budget being spent and committed as at year end. We reviewed our supply chain management policies and aligned them with the National Treasury regulations as and when they were issued. We had functional and effective bid committees. We paid 85.4% of our duty care creditors and 99.3% of our trade creditors within 30 days. The reason for the low rate in the duty care payment rate, it was a submission of invoices during the official December closure and also delayed required additional information from the duty care or creditors practitioner, which led to us not complying with 100% payment rate in 30 days. We incurred unauthorized, regular, and fruitless expenditure amounting to 38 incidents, which was a reduction of 38% compared to previous year. We had 62 incidents in 2016-2017. Okay, as mentioned earlier, we had an unqualified audit report, the 17th in succession, which was also a clean audit report. In the audit management report, we had 6 findings. 4 were rated as other important matters, while 2 were being administrative matters. The management report indicated that Legal Aid SA's required preventative or detective controls address the following outcomes in leadership, financial statements, performance reporting, governance, and compliance with legislation. All these were rated well. In terms of expenditure, overall we spent 99%. The operating budget was about 96%, with capital expenditure being 95%. These were mostly goods that were ordered towards year-end, but only delivered after year-end. The funds were approved, where a request was made to National Treasury for these funds to be rolled over, which was subsequently approved. Okay, then we're also presenting our abridged statement of financial position, showing the non-current and the current assets. So you'll note the non-current assets grew from 176 to 202 million. Mainly due to acquisition of assets as we replace them as and when they reach their useful life. And we also had current liabilities also increasing from 244 to 257, which was an increase in our provisions. So overall, there wasn't any material variances year on year. In terms of the statement of financial performance, it is indicating a deficit of 2.8 million. This deficit is mainly due to funding from some of the funds being sourced from our cash reserves, as opposed to that grant that was allocated in that financial year, that which is not included in the as revenue in the statement of financial performance. In terms of the abridged cash flow statement, we generated 41 million from operating activities, as opposed to the cash outflow of 90 million in the previous year, which was mainly due to the having to fund the cut from our existing allocation. Then overall, the cash and cash equivalents reduced slightly by 9 million from 245 to 234 million, again being having to supplement the grant with the cash reserves, where we had to draw about 11.5 million from our cash reserves. Okay, the statement compares the budget to the actual amounts. The material variance was mainly again on capital expenditure, where goods were delivered subsequent to year end, and a small amount being left for the ELA, our electronic legal aid administration system, that will be completed in this new financial year. Then the depreciation, which is a non-cash flow item, had a variance of 9%. Okay, then just coming to governance. In terms of governance, there was material compliance with the PFMA, triple PFA, and national regulations. However, we incurred irregular expenditure of 3.9 million, which was mainly due to non-tax compliant landlords and also non-compliance with supply chain management policy. Okay, and in terms of a combined assurance, we had 99% of our projects being delivered as per approved audit coverage plan, where that we have completed, and we also did 11 additional projects, thereby exceeding our target by 4%. Everything was achieved except for the finalization of some forensic audit, which took longer than anticipated. Our internal audit provides the third level assurance on the adequacy and effectiveness of controls and systems, indicated 99% of the audit coverage plan was delivered. And in terms of the forensic audit unit, they conducted 11 awareness workshops at our local offices across 5 provinces. Our legal quality assurance unit was tasked with independently and objectively assessing the quality of legal practitioners, and that includes civil, criminal, paralegals, and call center agents within our organization, and also Judicare practitioners. They completed 99.83% of assessments that were planned for 2017-18. And this was just below 1%, less than when compared to the performance of the previous financial year. Okay, then in terms of risk management, we continue to improve in this area where our risk maturity throughout the organization improved, where it was integrated with the strategic planning process, business planning, and also the strategy and the plan were reviewed, approved, and they're also in place and implemented effectively to manage and mitigate risk. Work was done also on the risk opportunities and emerging risks, which indicated that we can further improve on our risk intelligence. Then we also had that combined assurance model, as mentioned earlier, which ensured that Legal Aid SA had an adequate and effective system control environment, strengthening the integrity of external reports. Okay, then moving on to the internal business processes. Okay, then we'll just move on to slide 47. Okay, in terms of financial management and supply chain management, okay, Legal Aid SA was in compliance with all pieces of legislation that comprised the legislative universe and materially compliant but not fully compliant with Legal Aid SA Act, Triple PFA and the PFMA. As mentioned earlier, we had incidents of irregular and expenditure amounting to 3.9 million. Again, these mainly related to non-compliant landlords and also non-compliance with supply chain management. Okay, then moving on to employee and organizational capacity, slide 49. Okay, in terms of our recruitment for 2017-18, we recorded a 95.1% recruitment rate with a turnover of 6% excluding CAs. Okay, we also had our annual chartered accountant. Okay, thank you. So we had submitted our annual training report for 2016-17 and our annual training plan for 2017-18 to SACITA, submitted timely. And this is our third year of implementing our EE plan for 2015-2020. We continue to meet our targets except for African females at senior management level, which remains a challenge. Okay, in terms of our targets, okay, I'll just highlight where we have slightly material variances, which is mainly on under K4 women. Women, we 8.7% higher than target. This is for normal staff, but for senior management, we've got for blacks, we 10.5% lower than target. Africans 16.8%, and for women being 4.7%. It should be noted that due to budgetary constraints and the low levels of staff turnover, these rates of deaths are expected to continue like this in the next 2 to 3 years with very insignificant changes. Okay, in terms of people development, we introduced a 9-box talent management tool to manage effective succession planning and also employee development in recognition of employee performance against potential. As mentioned earlier on, HR practices benchmarked against top employer standards, and we received top employer accreditation for the 9th consecutive year during this current financial year, and also the industry winner for public sector segment for the 3rd year. And in terms of leadership, our leadership development program was supported by continued education and training in critical leadership competencies. Okay, moving on to IT. Okay, we at the final stages of developing our electronic legal aid administrative system, our EDA, and we also completed our VPN upgrade up to 90%. We couldn't finalize the implementation of ELA due to system enhancements and also delays when they were fixing bugs that were encountered during the quality assurance stages. And the VPN could only be completed 90% at this stage due to unavailability of infrastructure by the service provider. Okay, and lastly, in terms of stakeholder management, there was an improvement in terms of the national brand perception, which improved from 60% to 66% in this financial year. These programs, which were cost drivers, program drivers in increasing this brand awareness, they included marketing initiatives such as based on radio, television, press releases, as well as social media marketing, community outreach and education programs, including focus on empowerment through information on constitutional rights and Bill of Rights, as well as education on legal rights, and services provided through the call center and corporate branding and advertising. These contributed to the improvement in the brand perception awareness. Also, engagement with stakeholders cultivates good relations with the media. And 180 editorial meetings were held with broadcast and print media houses, and 772 roundtables discussions enhanced access to justice with the communities, and quarterly electronic stakeholder newsletters continued to contribute positively towards legal aid brand perception. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I think our chairperson has covered. Our chairperson has covered the issues relating to the board, so we'll skip those slides. On the strategic plan, we covered that to say we are on track. So we'll move to section 5 on the budget review and recommendations of the previous year. And I think other than supporting legal aid in terms of our issues relating to the budget, the committee was also looking at the issue of land. And on that issue, I'll just get Patrick to just clarify that we have been in discussions and we are waiting them to sort out the issue of the budget.
Thanks, Jim. Yes, we've held ongoing discussions with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, as well as the Chief Land Claims Commissioner. That's in conjunction with the DG of Department of Justice, relating to us providing legal representation in land reform and land tenure matters. Both the department and the commission still have to indicate what funds are available for us to provide these services to litigants. Once we know the extent of the funds that are available, then we're able to plan what services we would be able to make available based on the budget that can be made available. What we can't do from a legal aid perspective is to accept an unfunded mandate due to existing gaps in our current delivery of legal services, which has been worsened due to the budget cuts, which we will obviously discuss later in the presentation. So we've had various engagements in terms of trying to determine what the availability will be, but we still don't have a definitive figure at this stage.
Chair, in terms of the summary of performance, we'll skip section 6. It's just for the committee to see it at a glance. So if you have any questions, I'll answer. I just want to go to the last section, which is about moving forward. And I think in terms of that, I think as with other departments and entities that would have reported to you, our biggest challenge is budget cuts. And I think that the issue of budget cuts, it impacts staffing and staff posts, impacts our service delivery, not fulfilling our constitutional obligations, and reduction in access to justice for the poor. If we move to the next slide, it just indicates the extent of the cut, and if I can look at the issue in terms of slide 71, which is the table, it summarizes it, that currently as we speak, and this is already in place, so it's not like we're expecting it, this is in place. We had the 5% cut to the baseline, as well as the fact that we have the shortfall in terms of the amount that is allocated and the actual amount that is the cost of living increase to staff. And given that the bulk of our budget, 80%, is used to pay salaries for our employees, all salary-related items have a big impact on us. And also the budget cuts, therefore, also impact salaries because it's such a big part of our budget. So this slide shows that in the 2018-19 financial year, a total of 7.5% reduction we had, and that increases over the next 2 years. That in total over the 3 years it's a reduction or a cut of 503 million, and that this is after the 30 million that was allocated to us by the Department of Justice. So they did assist us and they allocated some monies. If we go to the next slide, you will see that in June of this year, Treasury issued further guidelines for the new medium term period, and if those are implemented, additional, then it means that this situation will get worse. But we still to hear from them about whether that will be implemented. Now, in the next few slides, we explain that over the last few years that we've been reporting to the committee, you would be aware that we have, as Legal Aid, implemented various measures to ensure efficiency and ensure a very lean budget. So what that means is when we get budget cuts, it impacts us in a big way. But despite this, we still try to see how we can make sure that the cuts that we had, we try and reduce expenditure, but we also try and even go for further efficiencies. But in the end, we had to cut staff posts. And that is where you will see on the slide on page 75, that what the impact of the budget cut has been is that since the year under review, which is 2017-18, as well as these next 3 years, we are reducing our staff complement by 10%. So that's the reality. What we've tried to do is to ensure that that is done by holding vacancies and ensuring that we don't impact people who are in their posts. And so far, we've been successful and we're trying to manage it in that way. But obviously, if we have that, then what it means, and that's shown on the next slide, is that it impacts the delivery of services. And what you will see on the next slide is that this 10% reduction means that over that period, we will reduce the number of matters we can do by 51,000 matters. So that's legal matters, less that we will do. And in the last two columns of that, you will see that we reduce coverage of the district court and regional court by 9% and 10%. Now, this is clearly going to impact on the performance in court. It means that that matters, we will have to still provide assistance, but it means that the matters will take longer and there will be bigger backlogs. Then there will be instances in which we won't be able to help. The next few slides talk to if the further cuts are implemented, so I won't go into that detail, but you will see that that situation gets much worse. And in the end, the impact of the budget cuts over these 3 years is that because, as I explained, and this is I'm talking to slide 79, yeah, that because of the fact that salaries is such a large part of our budget, it means that it has impacted our staffing. And also in terms of non-salary, you can see we've shown that we've already reduced, although we had, like I showed, it was 7 or 80 cents, we reduced by quite much more in the non-salary items, and over the past decade, we've reduced that by 21%. Now, there's a point at which we can't reduce that further, otherwise it won't be able to support the work that we do. So therefore, we have to find that balance. Also, if we reduce at this rate, it will compromise our constitutional obligations in terms of Sections 34, 30, 35, and 28. It impacts on the justice system, because if there are courts where we are not present, there are oftentimes instances in which that court won't be able to function. And also it impacts our clients in that they won't be able to access justice. Overall, I think that there are other cost pressures on the next slide. We show that which continue to impact our budget. But in the end, what we are saying, Chairperson, is that in our concluding comments on the last slide, is that we understand that financial constraints is government-wide, and therefore we are also facing it. However, given the sound financial management we've had and the way in which we've run an efficient organization and ensured a maximum reach to the clients with whatever budget we had, we did engage Treasury to say that when they use a one-size-fits-all, it doesn't work for us because it doesn't take into account that we do perform well and that we've tried very hard up to now to ensure that we use our money well. And they then use the same standard they use for everyone. However, in the end, the budget cuts are still there, and it means that we are affected. So our appeal to the committee is to support us in trying to see if we can reverse these cuts for the next year, and definitely to see if we don't get any additional cuts. So, Chairperson, I'd like to end there and hand back to the Chairperson if you want to make any concluding comments.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. I think the CEO has covered it well at the end, that we are becoming compromised in servicing the indigent part of South Africa in terms of legal services, and that it's the budget cuts that are causing this. We've taken the proactive measures of engaging the minister to alert him to this, that we are now reaching a stage where instead of not filling vacancies, we are now going to be retrenching staff. 2019-2020. That's the reality if these budget cuts are implemented. And that's why we thought we must come and present this to the committee. And I think in terms of our initiative of engaging the land cluster in line with the instruction and request from this committee to consider doing land matters, I'm not sure that we will have the necessary capacity to also attend to that. So I leave it there, Chair, and we will take questions on the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much.
PowerPoint has stopped functioning. No, it's not playing game with me. Thanks, Jay. I'll go from the hard copy. Jay, obviously there's five issues that we read, or four issues I'm dealing with, and then discussion for questions. I think if you would remember the regulations to the Legal Aid South Africa Act came into operation 22nd of August 2017, and they replaced what was then known as the Legal Aid Guide. In terms of Section 23.1 of the Act, regulations deal, and I've listed it in the presentation, different kinds of issues. Specifically, it sets criteria that an applicant must comply with in order to qualify for legal aid and conditions on which legal aid may be made available to the applicant. So the proposed amendment that we're making here only links to the question of the means test that we are dealing with. When we originally came to the committee, there was a request that we look at the means test, and that we went back and reconsidered the means test. So what is the means test? It is an easy administrative financial test for us to determine if an applicant qualifies for legal aid on a basis that they cannot afford the cost of their own legal representation. So what that really means is it's an easy administrative tool that our staff can apply. It doesn't mean sometimes you'll find the Constitution says if you're not able to afford the cost of your legal representation, there's a separate committee that considers really the bigger cases where an applicant may be earning some monies but is still not able to afford the cost of the legal representation because of the duration of the case or the complexity. But then a committee separately considers that matter and then decides as to whether legal aid should be granted. So your means test really deals with 99.5% of the cases that we deal with in terms of our clients. There's a limited number that have to come through what we call the constitutional means test. I then go, if you look at slide 6, in terms of regulation 27.1, in order to qualify for legal aid, either in civil or a criminal case, the applicant's gross monthly income less tax and net assets must fall within the parameters. So the means test looks at two aspects. It looks at both income as well as assets. You can't have someone that's a multi-millionaire saying I'm not employed but sitting with a lot of assets, then expecting also the state to fund their legal representation. So in a criminal case, the applicant must have net income of less than 5.5 per month. In a civil case, it will be the same. In a civil case where the applicant is married or forms part of a household, then that income can be up to 6,000 rand a month or less. When we're looking at immovable property currently, where a person has no immovable property, they can then have movable assets of less than 100,000 in either a civil or criminal matter. If they do have immovable assets such as a house, then they must have assets of less than 500,000 rand, subject thereto that there must then be an occupation of it. So the basis for the amendment we set out on page 8, as I mentioned to you, on the approval this committee said the minister should consider a review of the means test. We have considered the impact of inflation on the appropriateness of the means test, and also that the means test as was implemented was last reviewed in 2012. So we felt such a review was timely. And also we've considered the impact of such an increase in the means test on our reducing capacity, but determined that the impact would be minimal, as most applicants will still have been assisted having regard to the constitutional requirement that I mentioned earlier. They would have been assisted if they could not afford the cost of their own legal representation. Otherwise, they would have suffered substantial injustice. So we've looked at the CPI from 2013 until 2017 and therefore recommended an increase on the means test to take into account all the inflation based on increments that were implemented on our adjudicate tariffs as well since 2013. The proposed amendments means that the means test really is about 34.4% compounded annually as an increase. And so therefore the impact of that is results in the means test for single applicants increasing from 5,500 to 7,392 and for households from 6,000 to 8,063. So we've rounded those amounts off to 7,400 and 8,000 respectively, And then asset value for movables to increase from 100,000 to 128,000, and for immovables, or where they have also have immovables, from 500,000 to 640,000, respectively. So that's summarized, if you look at slide 10, quite effective to show what the current provision is and what the proposed increase is, and it's set out there in the slide on page 10. So therefore, after a full review of the means test by the board, it recommended to the minister that the means test should be amended by increasing the monetary amounts of the means test as currently contained in the regulations as follows. So regulation 27.2, sub 2 and sub 3, from 5,500 to 7,400. Regulation 27.4 to be increased from 6,000 to 8,000. And then regulation 27.5, the net asset value where there is no immovable property from 100,000 to 128,000. And then where there is immovable property to be increased, in regulation 27.6 to be increased from 500,000 to 640,000. Chair, so that's accordingly really the change that we seek to the regulations. I must mention to the committee, this has been informally tabled by the minister, because if it was formally tabled, the committee could either say, only say yes or no. So the minister felt it would be better to engage with the committee informally initially to hear if there are any concerns and any issues that the committee wants to raise before formally tabling it. So that's really where the presentation is and why we've sought the informal engagement on the means test. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. No, that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. For observing time, it's 1 minute past two. We did it on record time. That's very great. Okay, before I take hands, I know my colleagues will commend you on having received the 17th clean audit. 17th consecutive clean audit. Thank you so much. That's highly commendable, and for being the top employer for the ninth time. And also, what impressed me, I did an unannounced visit to the provincial office. It was around past four, but I found everybody in the office in Limpopo. That's really commendable. But normally, in some government departments, around that time, everybody is moving out. So that's really commendable, Chairperson. So, honorable members, questions and clarity seeking and... questions and clarity seeking on regulations or some additions, please. Honorable Mpumlana, Honorable Breitenbach, I can't see Honorable Horn.
He's not here.
It's not here. No, but he was here earlier on. He was here. No, he was here. You chased him away. I know you. And then Honorable Nkosi Buthelezi, Honorable Skosana, Honorable Pamela. Okay, Honorable Maila, and then Honorable Mwavi.
I'm sure Honorable Horn will have questions when he comes back.
Mhlonipheki, ngiyabonga kakhulu ngomsebenzi omuhle lo ngempela. Ngifuna ukwazi nje some few things. I understand that there was a plan to link illegal aid near SAPS so that you are able to facilitate people who are going to be assisted, if I'm not mistaken, or something like that area, as we discussed that last year. Oh, okay, sorry. No, it's just that I see the person I'm talking to. So
I'm unable to. Yeah. So what is the position regarding that plan? There is usually meetings of case flow management that happens in districts and areas. What is the impact of that in reducing the backlog, if any, and also the overcrowding? Why is this thing making noise? Yeah, I think should stop. In reducing overcrowding in prison, this is a very serious problem in the country generally. Overcrowding, mainly about 40%, if I'm not mistaken, of people who are waiting trial, and omnye uvukeliso lakho, omnye ukhomba omnye elisweni, amaphoyisa athi legal aid, uthi i-court. Yabo? I'm not putting any blame. I'm trying to find out what is the role of the legal aid. How does it assist, I mean, that thing that you're trying to do? Thirdly, what is the attitude of Legal Aid South Africa in the mediation process in solving disputes generally, both civil matters and criminal matters? Do you participate in such? There is another disturbing. There's another disturbing thing. A worry. That there are a number of mentally disturbed people in correctional services. The other category is people who are in the US is sabotage.
You must stop now.
I come stop early. But I'm not going to leave. Hello? Yeah, again. This one is missing. Because I think it's supposed to be going to Mebrenbach, this one. The other, that is disturbing. One category is people who cannot plead. I don't know why they go to prison. Because they are not waiting trial. Because they can't plead. The other one is people who state patients who have been I don't know whether there are no beds in prison, but this is disturbing. I want to find out, is there anything that the Legal Aid South Africa can assist in that direction? I think these people are supposed to be kept either in a mental hospital or somewhere. The other one, I'm saying this because they involve the problem of related to language, but luckily I've got a judge in front of me, so I hope he will be able to assist in this. there are cases where the accused, the statement is taken by a policeman from the accused. The accused is speaking in the African language, and the policeman is not necessarily the best interpreter, who would write it in English, in his own way of writing English. And then this matter is before the attorney or the legal aid attorney. What is the impact of that? And would you say perhaps if he would write it in the language of the person of the accused, exactly what is being said, not change the situation? I mean, does that affect the case or the justice in it? If so, what do you suggest? Thank you.
I want to give you this one.
You have recruiting, first of all, really well done, all of you, on a magnificent effort. Legal Aid South Africa is always the one highlight in these budget review cycles. You have irregular expenditure that's of a recurring nature with regards to leasing of buildings with landlords that don't have valid tax certificates. Is there a strategy to address this and to try and phase that out? Then, very commendably, Legal Aid South Africa represented many of the families who lost family members in the life issue to many tragedy. What is the current position with regards to these matters, and is Legal Aid South Africa going to continue to represent them going forward with regards to claims and possible criminal prosecutions that may be instituted? Will Legal Aid assist the families in that matter? Your training program has been very impressive. A couple of years ago, we'll all remember, there were lots of very negative comments from the judiciary with regards to the quality of arguments sometimes presented by Legal Aid South Africa, and this has all but disappeared. Your support program, your mentoring programs have obviously, and coaching programs have been very, very successful. Could you share some of the detail on this? Because it's perhaps a practice that can be rolled out elsewhere where it's sorely needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just two questions. The first one has something to do with what the President Berg has just asked now in terms of their strategy to deliver a quality client focused legal aid to poor people. How can they satisfy us that they're achieving that? Because you've got cases where poor people don't believe in legal aid because they've got this perception that their work is not of such a quality. And you find that a poor family end up selling their two milking cows to pay for a private lawyer because they don't trust legal aid. That's my first question. The second one has to do with the regulations in terms of the means test. To say, how do they, can they tell us more as to how they satisfy themselves to say an applicant does not qualify for a legal representation? Because in traditional communities, assets are not attached to an individual. So how then are they able to see that Umzamo Buthelezi is not qualifying or does qualify? You found that there is an asset at home which is about 2 million, but not attached to anyone in terms of legal attachment. So how do they then figure out to establish that? Thank you.
No, thanks, Honorable the teacher. No, we welcome the report from the Legal Aid Board, as led by the chair and the CEO. And I would like to join the acting chair in congratulating you for achieving the clean audit, which is also indicated here that is your 17th unqualified audit in a row. I think that's quite remarkable. Something which is very scarce. I think we need to commend you on that, and also commend you for achieving most of your targets, even though you had a budget cut of 92 million. I think that's also commendable, and that you were able to spend 99% of your budget. I think that's what we want as a committee, that if people receive an allocation, we're expecting them to spend it, to spend 100%. So I think we really appreciate that. Well, on the irregular expenditure, I see here there's an irregular, you incurred an irregular expenditure of 6 million, which relates to leasing of buildings from landlords without valid tax certificates. So I want to find out, CFO, how did that happen? How did you find yourself leasing buildings from landlords without valid tax certificates? Because I think Legal Aid Board is quite a big institution. So I think when you go about this, obviously there are supply chain management regulations that regulates that. How did you find yourselves in a situation where in you are leasing buildings from landlords without valid tax certificates? I think that's my question. Well, lastly, Honorable Chair, I think it's quite a serious challenge which the board is raising, and of which I think they have raised it even last year, this issue of budget cuts. I think it's affecting them severely. I think we know that all entities are affected, even government departments, but I think this one is quite a special case. I think it's affecting them severely, because the fact that 80% of their budget is used for compensation of employees, I think that on its own is a red flag. Because it means only 20% of the budget is used for core business, but the 80% is used for the compensation of employees. I think that on its own is a problem. But now this further budget cuts, I think it puts even more strain to say now they've got posts, some of them maybe are critical, they can't fill them. They must just leave them as they are. But like the chair indicated that if there's a budget cut next year, they might then now be led to a position where they have to retrench warm bodies, not just leaving vacant posts to freeze, but they will have to go now and say, you must go home, you must go home. I think that's it's a negative thing that we don't want to see it happening. So I think also as a committee, maybe now we need to stand up and see what we can do, take practical steps in order to try and assist them. Speak to all the relevant offices and see how can we assist them. At least maybe in the next financial year, we will have in a budget cut. Because I think that will it's going to affect service delivery to their clients. But secondly, people are going to lose jobs. You see, so I think that's not something that we would like to see as the Committee of Parliament. So I'm just appealing to the committee that we need to step up and try to intervene on this matter. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. And let me start by welcoming the the report. There is indication that there were some unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, though it has reduced. But what I wanted to check is, even if it has reduced, but it's there, so
were there any consequence management on those who were found to be responsible for that irregular expenditure? In one slide, you indicate that meeting the employment equity target for African females at senior management level remains a challenge. What could be the problem? Is it that we don't have enough African women? What is happening? Maybe you'll just advise us. No, I concur with the Honorable Skosana. The issue of the the budget cuts, it's really a problem. It's not for the first time that we engage in this matter. I remember the last time we were even suggesting that there are certain things that we can do as a committee, and we haven't done what we were supposed to have done. I think from now the ball should be squarely in the committee's court, that we ensure that we do what we need to do as this committee. Legal Aid South Africa is part of the integrated justice system. Now, linked to what Honorable Mpumlwana was saying, if this integrated justice system is not working, the problems that will crop up will be the case management will have a problem on one hand, and in correctional services there will be the problem of overcrowding because of this system is a multi-departmental system. So I wanted to check how Legal Aid in particular is performing in this particular project. Do you feel that you have reached where you want to reach? Are you being pulled back by other things? If so, can you be able to clarify to us what could be the problem? Judge President, you are indicating that you are nearing the end of your term. Sir, you can't blow your own horn. Maybe let me blow it for you. I think you can look back with pride. Yeah. You know, you have earned yourself a seat in the greatest South Africans of our time as a leader. And we really appreciate that. And we hope those who will get into your boots will not pull the standard down, because that will be a sad day. We would like to thank you very much for your effort.
Thanks,
Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Unfortunately, I don't have the
In any event, I'm a rat boy. Anyway, these things are not there where I come from. I use my voice in a very huge hall. Thank you, Chair. Greetings to members and the Legal Aid delegation, and Baba, Judge President. Well, my colleagues have covered a number of questions that I had, Chairperson, but there's only one that I think it's important that I raise on your regulations, Mr. CEO, page 10, where you have those salary scale, 5,500 or less. We are proposing 7,400 or less. Well, if I sound wrong, Chairperson, you correct me if I'm out of order. But I'm thinking of the unemployed. And I do not think that the unemployed are well captured in this category, not captured in this popular term these days. Yeah, on regulations, page 10. Yes. Because as my thinking says, Chairperson, if you say 5,500 or less, you will go up to 10 rand. But the unemployed person doesn't have that money. Can't we say zero income up to 5,500? Because it doesn't mean that those who are unemployed do not find themselves on the challenging side of the law. That's my query. It's not clear as to where do you put the unemployed at all. Because as I'm saying, they do not feature or fit in the less or less category. That's my submission. Thanks, Chairperson. Or maybe it's English that is frustrating.
In our annual plan, there is some way you refer to in terms of employment equity. You make reference to African blacks, so I get confused. What does it mean? No, it's stated clearly. Blacks, then there's some way you say stated African. But as my colleagues have alluded to, I really sympathize with the Legal Aid South Africa, because with this 90 million shortcut, you managed to reach your target, you managed to perform as expected. You know, there were some entities of a department who came before you who were in similar situation where they were budget cuts, but they didn't manage to perform as you did. That's why I will align myself with Honorable Skosana, who will say that maybe we sort of, I don't know how we can help. There is this bank which says, how can we help you? That's my bank, First National Bank. How can we help you? Because this is a very, very unique, special case where within very scarce resource, despite that, you manage to perform as expected. Isn't it? Thanks so much. Then as to, I'll come to...
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I'll just deal with probably two of the questions. The executives are here. They'll deal with the others because most of them are operational. But I understand your concern, Honorable. I understand it. But an unemployed person qualifies automatically for legal aid. You don't have to worry about that. Yes. I just thought, let me just get that out of the way. But let me just give you the much more fundamental issue that was raised by Honorable Mpumlwana about the overcrowding in our prisons. If you remember, Honorable Mpumlwana, I think 3, if not 4 years ago, when I came here, I mentioned this, that when I chair my PEC, that's the Gauteng one, you'll find that there are people who are awaiting trial for 10 years or longer. And we do our best to track and encourage that those cases be finalized quicker. But my suggestion at that time was it would serve this committee very well not to talk to me as legal aid on my own, because I'll point my fingers elsewhere, to have a justice cluster engagement coming to talk to this committee. That's legal aid, that's prosecutions, that's justice, and that's correctional services. And police, yes, and police. Because all of these people have something to play. But one single factor comes out of this failure to finalize awaiting trial detainee cases quickly, and that is the regional courts. If you check everywhere, those courts are the ones that are carrying the biggest load of awaiting trial detainees, some of them very long. Right? You won't find them in the district courts. You'll find minimal in the high courts. The bulk of them are in the regional courts. I can't talk for the regional courts.
I have my own observations about what's causing this because of my own interventions in Gauteng. But I think for the committee to help South Africa in this thing, that cluster engagement will go a very long way. And I would recommend that it happens because we will all be there. If they point a finger in my direction, I'll be there. And we will come with facts. We're not talking generally. As legal aid in the PECs, we get information that we've got so many cases that are over 10 years. These cases are before that magistrate, that magistrate, that magistrate. We have it there. So it will help this committee to get to the bottom of it and ensure that probably on an annual basis, there's a reporting mechanism that says last year we had so many awaiting trial detainees, let's say 10,000. Why are they 12,000? Because I think it's high time that this happened. People are spending longer and longer times in prison when they should not. So that's my answer. We track them as legally, but sometimes we are hamstrung because we must sing to the tune that's introduced by the judiciary or by the prosecution. Right? And sometimes you have a lot of other facts that play into this. And that deal with the backlogs as well. If you don't have a credible and reliable tracking system of why are these cases staying so long on our rolls, we'll not solve this. So I think that's my plea again to this committee. And I'm prepared to come and assist in that regard, regarding that issue. Now, the other issue that was raised, I think it was Honorable Ngosi, about the perception that poor people have about our quality. I'm happy, Honorable, you said perception, because that's what it is. It's the perception. Those cases where we can be told that your lawyer performed badly, and I've asked for that, and I get it now and then, we are able to intervene and make sure that proper quality legal services are provided. But it's difficult to deal with perception. Right. We do our best in these training engagements, in these outreach programs where we talk to people. Right? We say, look, if you have a problem, come to us. And then they tell us, say, no, we can't come to you because your lawyers do this, do this, do this. I mean, we come from an age a long time ago where legal aid lawyers were accused of forcing people to plead guilty. I'm sure you remember. That's a long time ago. It's no longer happening. Because I think this committee, amongst others, told us that your lawyers are doing this because they are chasing targets. So we had to address those things. So I think it remains a perception if it's still there, but the program of tracking the unrepresented accused who refuse legal aid in the lower courts and get convicted and go, their matters go on automatic review, I've tracked it. I've been tracking it. And it has reduced drastically. I think it's now less than 2,000 nationally. It used to be over 12,000 where people flatly refused legally. But not now, not anymore. So it remains a perception, but it's on the downward trend. And that's what tells us that the confidence in our services continues to grow. I think that's my answer to you, Chair, Honorable Nkosi. Now, the irregular expenditure, I can understand, is of concern. My executives will deal with it, right? The employment equity target, I think it was mentioned that it has been like that for some time because people stay in their positions, right? But when the opportunities to recruit, I think that will present us with an opportunity to make sure that we recruit in the correct direction, right? In terms of the word black and African, Honorable Chair, that's how the Act has it, the Employment Equity Act. It defines who are blacks and who are Africans. Now, Chair, I think the other question was, Honorable Mbumlwana asked the question about, from a case management point of view, how can legal aid assist regarding backlogs and stuff? We continue, I know, our provincial heads who attend the PECs, continue to feed those committees with credible information. It used to be difficult to get to know who are these magistrates who are sitting on matters. But now, because of engaged tracking, we now know. And we are now able to can say, Mr. Regional Court President, those magistrates, that magistrate are sitting on these matters. Why are they not finalizing them? So to ask those questions helps, because then people get jolted to say, actually, you can't rush to start new work when you have old work that is unfinished. Chair, could I hand over to my executives to deal with the other questions? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, thanks, Chairperson. I'll cover a question that our JP has not addressed. With regard to the integration of SAC with legal aid statistics, that has been a program that has been ongoing with the IGS for a while. There has been integration that has been put on hold because we are at the moment developing our new case administration system. And as soon as our case administration system is up and running again, then that integration will integrate with the new system. It will be a waste of time to integrate it fully with the system that we are decommissioning. I need to state that the intention of that is to be an alert when a suspect is arrested who will require legal aid. Then what actually happens is the police will basically put it on their CAS system, and that will come to legal aid automatically, and we will know the next morning that someone will require legal aid at the court that our lawyer is going to. The problem with it, however, is that we will not know which courtroom that person is. If there's multiple courtrooms, then we will get an alert someone is going, but we wouldn't know exactly which courtroom, because that will be only known the next day. But what it will help us is having all the details of the client available, ID number, etc., and that can actually help us in terms of once we link the client, it can automatically populate our case administration system with the details that the SAP has already provided. So it will have that benefit, but it's not going to necessarily improve how we link to the client, because we will meet the client at the court at its first appearance. With regards to case law, our JP has covered that. I need to state to the committee that a lot of the efficiencies can take place at local level if these committees work well. And what we find is it depends very much on the leadership provided at a provincial level by the judge president. If there's energy and effort provided, you'll find at the local level it works better. Because what the committees are there to do is to unblock processes that cause delays in court. And we find that in many provinces where that energy is being put in, measures can be taken to actually make the court system function more smoothly. So we think, certainly from a legal aid perspective, all our managers have to actually participate actively. And actively means not only defend legal aid or to advance legal aid, but now to be more proactive in terms of addressing the committees in terms of where we think there are blockages that other stakeholders need to actually address. In terms of the attitude of legal aid to mediation, Patrick can talk more about it, but we did participate in a pilot program some time ago. But the problem was that the payment of the mediator, the mediator would become a problem because our clients would not be able to pay. In criminal case, we know the NPA does a lot of informal mediations. So where these are clients of legal aid, then certainly we welcome those opportunities where cases can be removed and mediated on. With regards to the integrated justice system, legal aid is an integral part of the system. JP has mentioned what will help in terms of all of us working together. We can commit ourselves to saying that we do actively participate in all structures that lend itself. We think that whilst we may be efficient, there could be opportunities for other stakeholders to improve on their efficiencies. Certainly, we committed to ensuring that we do not contribute to delays in the system. So we want to be the solution to it. But if others can also play their role, then it will be great. In fact, right now we are trying to work closer together in terms of, with budget cuts taking place across the board, how can we work together so that we actually optimize the efficiencies that cause. Thanks, Chair. I'll pause there, and maybe other members can take over. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'll address the questions relating to irregular expenditure. Okay. To the question that was raised by the member saying, how did we find ourselves leasing buildings from non-compliance landlord? Okay, we would have gone out on tender and appointed a compliance service provider. So we were going out on tender every 5 years. So after a 5-year period, when we go out on tender, sometimes even would advertise even 3 times, where you'd find non-responsive service providers or no goods received, you know, in a particular area, especially in rural areas. And, you know, then we would then go out on an alternative, would get the accounting officer to then approve a deviation. A deviation would mean we now targeting specific service providers because we'd have gone out several times on an open market. So now we've got a choice. Do we either close that office or do we continue with this existing service provider who was compliant 5 years ago but is no longer compliant now? So we'd end up saying, you know, we need to, service delivery needs to continue. Hence, we would then continue leasing from this service provider who is now non-compliant. When we first entered, they were compliant, but as we know, the situation changes. But in order to continue with service delivery, we would then continue leasing from them. But in that instance, it would be for a shorter period while we continue looking for alternative premises, you know, still evaluating if the service provider is compliant. So in terms of what are we doing to address this, because it's continuous, what is the plan to phase it out? With the limited funds we had, we were building funds over a period where, for example, in this case, we would have spent 99% of our budget. We then approached Treasury to say, can we keep this remaining whatever that we didn't spend, and would build it up and buy premises in areas where we were struggling, where we do not have compliance service provider, or it's just difficult to get premises in general, because either we find unscrupulous landlords who are charging exorbitant escalation rates, or premises are just limited, you know, in those areas. Then we target those and purchase property. That way we won't have to deal with landlords. Also, where we have incurred irregular expenditure, we then engage National Treasury, where we indicate to them, you know, giving them the full background and request for condonation. We've had instances where they would condone such irregular expenditure. Also, we are now working currently we're leasing out the maximum period that we have for premises to lease premises is 5 years. So we're looking at extending that period. That way we don't have to go out every 5 years. The period would be longer, you know, where we are leasing and we haven't procured those premises. And we're starting the process 9 months before the expiry of the lease. We have now extended that to 18 months. So with all these things that we have implemented, we're hoping that this will assist us in reducing the irregular expenditure. In terms of consequence management for those who have incurred such expenditure, for fruitless and wasteful, there's full recovery. So whoever is responsible for fruitless and wasteful would recover from that person that incurred that. In addition to that, depending on the severity of the transgression, you know, they would be issued with a warning, or if it's a first transgression and the amount is immaterial, because regardless of the amount, we do recover, whether it's 10 rand or 100 rand. For the financial year under review, the fruitless and wasteful that we incurred was 898 rand. So off that, we did recover. And also, in addition to recovery and the warnings, where those relevant employees qualify for bonuses, their performance incentive bonus will then be moderated or affected, again, you know, as part of consequence management. But where it was irregular expenditure and it wasn't in the control of the employee, such as a landlord that is not compliant in terms of his tax affairs, we do not then hold the employee accountable because it wasn't in his control and, you know, it's not within his performance. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think there's one or two aspects that I can cover. I think, Mr. Mpulwana, in terms of mediation, the regulations do make provision for us to be able to participate in mediation. We, in fact, ran a pilot project a few years ago where we looked at every single civil matter and to go and convince the parties to go through to mediation. Ultimately, our results were very, very limited because you found sometimes most of the parties wanted to have their time in court, and when we convinced our client to go and convince the opponent, so we did a whole report to the board on that. There is also a pilot project from the Department of Justice perspective. The difficulty there is it actually increases the cost initially for your case from a legal aid perspective, because we have to then, because our client can't afford to pay, we would have to pay for the mediator and the costs of the mediator. We haven't been allocated any additional funding to be able to participate in such a program. So that's the difficulty you sit with. If you ultimately, over a period of time, are able to reduce the time you spend on cases, you might then be able to say you're reducing the cost of it. But mediation does form part of the program and is part of the mediation. In terms of mentally disabled persons in prisons, I know that there's specifically this is also managed via the Criminal Justice System Review. But where we find that there is someone there, we can definitely assist. If someone shouldn't be there, shouldn't be held there, to bring an application to ensure that they're dealt with and released. The difficulty you have in some instances is then the availability of beds for these assessments in terms of Section 77 and 78 of the Criminal Procedure Act to determine whether they're able to understand the difference between right and wrong and then align their actions in accordance with it. Because only once you've determined that, can the court determine whether they must then become a president's patient. And so it's that process. But I think you're correct. We've got to be watching where people have been held in prison when they should be going for assessments. But if you've got come across some of those, it's difficult to find because, as such, we don't have that information in terms of those that have been held like that. So we have at stages asked our practitioners, if you come across someone that's been held and been held beyond what is reasonable, will go for the assessment. They must bring it to us so that we can also take such a matter on. I will move then to Life as a Domini. Life as a Domini, we assisted 67 survivors and their families. So, and we received the monies for all 67 and the monies in regard to compensation for all 67 survivors and their families have been paid to them. We currently are monitoring the implementation of the rest of the award. We've just received the strategy to address the issues that arose in Life as a Domini from the MEC for Health. We're currently looking at the strategy to see if it does address the issues that arose from an Domini perspective. So there is what we can see a seriousness to address the issues that arose. So we're monitoring from that perspective. As to assisting them in the criminal matters as such, we do not provide assistance in these instances where they would have to be witnesses to deal with it, because they then become the state's witnesses. So as such, and we don't have capacity to then assist them in regard to matters where the criminal matters are being taken on. Mr. Nkosi, in regard to how do we satisfy ourselves that a person qualifies for legal aid?
Actually, Mr. Buthelezi, is Chief Buthelezi. The chair was saying Nkosi, Chief
Buthelezi. Oh, Nkosi, okay. Ah.
I'm here
My apologies. Honourable Buthelezi. In regards to how do we satisfy, we obviously take applications and we ask for evidence in terms of income, expenditure, assets. Obviously, as you say, there are some instances where you might miss it. But so we don't do, shall we say, a forensic audit of everyone, because it will just be too costly to forensically audit everyone. What we are saying is where you look at an exceptional case or someone arrives and we have them, they arrive in their Mercedes-Benz dripping in gold and chains and those kind of things, that's where then the office has to have, say, can I have assistance from our internal audit department, and we've got facilities there to be able to forensically investigate and determine what the issue is, and we also have an agreement with the FIC. So we're able to obtain information where we feel what they tell us doesn't align to what we see. We've had it in a matter, for example, Porritt and Bennett, which is running currently in JP's court, where they spent something like 10 years and 21 million rand avoiding trial, and then coming and say legal aid must now fund us. And we resisted that and took that all the way to the Supreme Court of Appeal, where we feel what they tell us doesn't align to what we see. So I think that's just in terms of how we would manage that. I think Patrick is looking for other questions. There are two questions, Chair, if you don't permit me, that I want to deal with. The one is the language issue. I think Honorable Mpumlwana raised that question. It's an old challenge that's been there as to when an accused person is arrested and elects to talk, whether he or she is allowed to write his or her own statement or the policeman writes a statement, right? But that applies to witnesses as well. It's an old problem. I think SAPS has to be engaged. One of them has to deal with resources, unfortunately. You can't expect SAPS to employ interpreters. I know that that issue is currently topical as far as asylum seekers is concerned, whether Home Affairs must employ interpreters for every conceivable opportunity. I think it has to be resource-based, right? But there are practical solutions to that. If the policeman can ask the witness or the accused, can you write your own statement? Because then it reduces those challenges that crop up later in court, where the witness says, I didn't say that. The person didn't understand me. But I think it requires a practical intervention in that regard, and it can be done. That's my take of it. The other question was the turnaround regarding our quality interventions. We came here, the committee lambasted us for the criticisms it was getting about us. And we went down and we introduced the quality assurance unit. And we've never looked back. We've sold it, not sold it, we've engaged other bodies like the Law Society. We pride ourselves that we are one entity that has ensured we have such a unit in-house where you actually assess lawyer performance individually, and it works. So we are open to anyone who's interested in wanting to know how we do it, and it works, Chair. That's what has returned the confidence in our services regarding the quality of our work. I think there was one other question that remains unanswered. That is it. I don't have cattle to pay for misaddressing you. Please forgive me. But I think you asked a question about, in a traditional setting where there is property, but it's not linked to an individual, how do you deal with that? Our system is not inflexible. It's not inflexible. Right. As Mr. Andermack says, we look at whatever situation presents itself to us. Right. And we have fallback positions. Right. As to if at first instance someone may have made a mistake and refused legal aid, there are follow-up, either appeals or other interventions that correct the situation. So I think our system is that. Now, I think those are all the questions that were asked. Chair, pardon me if we've missed others. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Chair of Board. Is there any follow-up question?
Yes.
Oh, wait. 6 minutes to sorry. Okay. Is there follow-up, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay.
On the two issues here, I want to address you as Honorable Justice, if you don't mind. I don't want to say by lot now, I'll be happy. The two issues, one, would you, there's a question of money regarding mediation. Can perhaps we involve honorable elderly members of the community to intervene? Because, as you probably know, in the African way of doing things, you have representatives from various parties involved from the side of the from two. For example, on the question of domestic violence, if you have people who are involved before the marriage, why can't they be involved now? You know, why? So you get people from both families to get involved. Or a magistrate or any justice of this to assist rather than pay somebody to do that. Secondly, on the question of language, I'm not sure whether you heard me correctly. I was saying that personally, let me explain my problem. I feel very strongly that the concentration in this country is not on achieving justice, but on promoting the system and maintaining the system or English. for example, in most cases where the Afrikaners took over from 1948, they promoted Afrikaans. And everything is done through the medium of Afrikaans. And then there's justice. Everybody understands. But here, you find that people, they're resisting that you are trying to, you don't concentrate on that, whether it will be justice if it is done through the medium of the African language, the proceedings. Now, I personally feel that if there is a proceedings, maybe the interpretation can go for records. But the proceedings be done because it doesn't have that problem. You have somebody writing in Sizulu, the policeman, and the person knows and is read to him in that language and he understands. And then the whole proceedings are done in that. Perhaps if, according to Chief Justice, he wants some English, then it's put into as a matter of putting that record. But the first record of the police is done in the African language, then that solves that particular problem. Now, I wanted to comment because you are part, legal aid participates in this particular system of access to justice. And in fact, that is their core business. So I just wanted to find out if you agree with me. And if you do, how far can you assist in bending the hands of the justice?
Within 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first one, mediation, that's the reason the mediation project in the lower court is failing, because of the payment part. But there are moves afoot. I chair a subcommittee of the Law Reform Commission to come with a new model regarding mediation. But in Gauteng, I can tell this committee that we'll be embarking on a project from the beginning of the year where we see, as the leadership of the courts, high courts and lower courts, where we sift cases and start referring others to mediation. But it's going to be, we won't call it mediation, we'll call it ADR. It will be an internal court-controlled ADR process. Because the benefit of that is it will reduce our backlogs, our caseloads. Because there are cases that are waiting too long for trial dates when they can be mediated and taken out of the system. So the payment part is a problem. But we probably, when whoever succeeds me comes to report next year about how successful that project is, you'll learn more about it.
but we're thinking about it. And the Chief Justice, the Chief Justice is the prime mover that we should actually, as courts, take charge of those processes. In terms of the language, Honorable Mpumlwana, I hear you. I don't want to put my neck on the block and say I'll do this, but as legal aid, we will get involved in discussions that are looking at the most appropriate and efficient way of ensuring that justice happens. That much I can say. Yes. Thank you, sir.
Maybe on the one thing, on the regulations, I think you were correct. So the amendment is to increase the numbers of people that can qualify for legal aid assistance in terms of the means test. The means test, as I said, is not the be-all and the end-all. For example, the regulations also do state someone that gets a SASSA grant qualifies for legal aid automatically. So that's also dealt with in the regulations. So this is not intended to say you must earn this as a salary, and anyone who doesn't earn a salary is unemployed, is excluded. That's definitely not the intention of it. Anyone that's unemployed, as JP mentioned, is included in the scheme and qualifies for our assistance. So I just wanted to clarify that for the committee.
Okay, thank you so much. Are we on your
call?
Thank you, Chairperson. I see advocate is ganging with them against me.
Hey, why not? No, look, I am already here. I don't gang with anybody. Oh, look, it's 5 minutes. It's
oh, sorry, I just wanted to know the effect of the budget cuts and shortfalls, more especially to this current financial year. So what are the effect, or are you comfortable with it, or do you want us to, because when we're going to the BRL, to the house, we must, because I see it's affecting you, but I don't know, I want to hear it from you, what are the effect of this budget cuts and shortfalls?
And it's performing so well. I think we should treat it as a special case. But for your sake, because maybe you come from the same province in the life, let's give them 1 minute to just satisfy you, but they have answered very well.
Chairperson, thank you. I think that, yes, we covered it in the last section of our presentation, and we said that this issue of budget cuts is our biggest challenge, that we as an organization have managed ourselves efficiently over the past decade and built ourselves into a high-performance but a lean organization. So any cuts that we have is now impacting our staffing, and we indicated that we will have to reduce our staffing by 10% over this and the next 2 years, and that's going to impact on us doing less matters, 51,000 less matters over that period. And it also means that if we get more cuts, this is going to be much worse. So that is where we would like the support of the committee to see if we can actually reverse the cuts and definitely not get any more cuts. Thank you, Chair.
And the DPS matter, a briefing on that.
Thank you so much, Chairperson of the Board, and we'd like to thank you because we don't know what will happen next year to some of us. We should not yet attend. So we thank you for having had such a very cordial working relationship and for having steered the ship so well.
working as a collective. We can see by conduct and everything that you do. And thank you so much. We hope you have a safe flight back to the various destinations. Thank you. Honorable members, we meet tomorrow next door at 9:30. 9:30 we start. Thank you.